Welcome. This is Evergreens by Spurkis, a podcast about sustainability, technology, and the future of banking and finance. Hosted by Brian Ferrari and joining the conversation.
My name is Sven Konta. I work in the financial markets department. I'm in charge of the customer desk where we do Forex and money market transactions for and with our customers. And that's my daily business.
My name is Johannes Sedelmeier. I'm a postdoc at the University of Luxembourg at the Interdisciplinary Center for Security, Reliability and Trust. And my research is focused on blockchain technology and digital identity systems.
My name is Andrei Martavoy. I work at the Luxembourg Banking Association and I'm a senior advisor on the questions related to innovation, digitalization and fintech. And I coordinate different initiatives at our association, like the working groups on blockchain technology and crypto assets, plus also what concerns the discussion about markets and crypto asset regulation, DLT pilot regime, and also cybersecurity.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of the Evergreens podcast by Spurkis, where we will cover digital currencies and more precisely the digital euro project. And to me, it is quite confusing because there are a lot of different terms out there and maybe it should be plainly stated what is the digital euro. And if someone would like to start and giving us an easy to understand definition and what it is and what it is not.
Yeah, I try to do my best. I think first it's important to that people understand how money works and that we have different types of money. More precisely, we have people are used to use commercial money, and then on the other side we have central bank money, and that's something people in their daily life use only via cash. So cash is the only, as of today, is the only central bank money people are used to work with. And the rest, the money that's in their current account, is commercial money. And what is commercial money? Commercial money is just a promise of the bank that people can exchange this money into central bank money. But most of the cash people use is commercial money. So, and then now with the digital euro, it's the first time we have a project where the central bank wants to create a new type of money where people can use it in digital form and it's issued by the central bank. So there's no intermediation between the banks and the central bank, but it will be in direct money from the central bank.
Indeed. And then on my side, I would like to add that it's going to be a digital representation of the central bank money. And then the idea is the following, that this new form, which is called digital euro, will be in addition to the cash, which anyway will exist in the economy. So there is no any kind of discussion at this stage on the fact that digital euro would replace cash. But by cash, first of all, we mean basically banknotes and then the coins, which basically all of us use in a daily life. And then the message which we would like to pass is specifically that the digital euro would be a supplementary element towards the cash which exists at the moment in the economy.
And why was that decision taken to venture into a digital euro, for example?
So from my perspective, there are several reasons. So if we think about the reason why the central bank is thinking about this, the central bank's main goal is to maintain financial stability, and they do so through monetary policy. And so they need to be sure that their monetary policy remains effective. Now we're seeing that overall we have a declining use of cash, specifically accelerated in the COVID pandemic. We see competition in the payment sector through big tech corporations. We see cryptocurrency and stablecoins emerge. And so the central banks are a bit concerned that basically the use of central bank money could be reduced and therefore the impact of their monetary policies could be restricted. And so one way of countering this is by introducing a new type of central bank money, which is then directly accessible to the customers, to the retailers.
You just mentioned cryptocurrencies. So what would then be the main differences between both? Because there are crypto euros which are available, but what would be the main differences?
So the crypto euros, I guess you're referring to stable coins, So this is commonly a type of virtual payment that or virtual asset that you can access on different kinds of blockchains, and they are collateralized in some form. There are different types of collateral, so in fact it's quite difficult to have a sound collateralization of a stablecoin. But basically there's then again a promise that every euro stablecoin you can exchange for 1 euro, be it the cash euro or the commercial bank euro. But there is some risk to that, that maybe this does not work. So if the collateral fails to hold, which we have observed in the past, specifically if the collateral was another crypto asset, but also in times of a lot of volatility in monetary markets, it could happen that those collaterals do not fully cover what would need to be covered. And then you have basically the same counterparty risk that you also have in the case of commercial money, just that the technological foundation or also the governance foundation might be a bit different from a bank. And so by contrast, the digital euro would be a direct liability to the central bank. So essentially the only counterparty risk you have is the central bank failing, which I think we usually ignore of happening.
I think it's very important for people out there that they understand the difference between a digital euro and then the cryptocurrencies, stable coins. I think, for example, a few years ago, we had the Facebook project, the Libra coin. I think that put some pressure on the central bank to find a solution or an alternative to these crypto coins. Because when today you want to a payment in another currency, it can be very complicated. It can, when you do a payment in dollar, for example, with your euro account, it can take a few days until the dollar arrives at the destination. If on weekend you want to do a crypto payment, you can do so, and it's distributed on the blockchain, and it's open 24/7. So it's very interesting. We have a very powerful solution for payment in the crypto world, and the standard banking world is not there yet. I think that's one point that makes some pressure on the central banks to search for alternatives. And I think we have already mentioned one point, the big difference between crypto, stable coins and central banks, digital currencies, that the euro is issued by the central bank. So there is a central authority that has full control of that money. And that's a big difference between the blockchain world. So blockchain purists, they don't appreciate too much when there is a central authority has full control of that. So, and finally, it's not yet decided if the digital euro will be on a DLT basis or not.
So you're speaking DLT, just for those who maybe not be aware, is another word for distributed ledger technology, which is another word for blockchain. So we don't know if this digital euro will be via the blockchain or via other means then.
Yes, as of today, the central bank, the European Central Bank, has not taken a decision yet in what form the central bank digital currency, the euro, will be distributed. Will there be a central ledger or will it be on some blockchain technology?
But then you touched upon a subject which is one of the biggest criticism points, which is the centralized nature of it, because all the crypto people, they are keen on being decentralized. So how will that be appreciated?
I think that really crypto enthusiast purists, they will stay with their stable coins, and then the digital euro will be really the alternative to adopt some advantages of cryptocurrency stable coins, but not all of them. And one point that we made, one point you can discuss is the central authority. So, and I think that's something we can't change with digital euro. But that's the main and one of the very important differences between the crypto world and the digital euro.
I think we should also distinguish basically between the technical foundation of maintaining the ledger and the technical foundation behind controlling the money supply. Because theoretically we could split those two. So we could decide to issue a digital euro on some blockchain like Ethereum, which has smart contracts, where then the European Central Bank would essentially control one of the cryptographic key pairs that decides what the current monetary supply is. I'm not saying that this is a realistic scenario, but in theory, we could split those two and then at least benefit, for instance, from the increased availability guarantees, which blockchain ledger could offer. But on the other hand, maintain the mandate of the European Central Bank to control the monetary supply, even though there are a bunch of technical challenges that need to be addressed, be it excessive transparency, scalability issues of blockchains, and so on.
Indeed, and then I totally agree with my colleagues. So at the moment, there is no any kind of clear decision what kind of technology is going to be used for the digital euro. What we know at this moment is the following, that basically for the digital euro, there are going to be two use cases. One use case is specifically a digital euro, which should be available to all citizens, which is called retail digital euro. And then for that specific case, it looks like that expectation of the European Central Bank is to come up with a kind of centralized technological solution which would overcome any kind of difficulties what concerned which are related to basically to the usage of the blockchain technologies, like for instance scalability. And then, as you know, that in case if we talk about the blockchain protocols like a proof of work, it can take minutes to get processed. But then the idea is to come up with a solution which could be easily used but rather centralized. But again, at this moment, there is no kind of final solution is taken. What we observe on a contrast as compared to the wholesale digital euro, indeed, the experimentations which are taking place now at the level of European Central Bank take into account distributed ledger technology, which is blockchain. So it means that at this stage, European Central Bank tries to explore two options, the centralized option, or the technology which is basically centralized, and then decentralized option, which will be applied to the wholesale digital euro.
That's a very interesting point to say that there are several projects, so that we have to do the difference between retail digital currencies and then wholesale digital currency. And I just want to mention that currently there are some pilot projects within the Eurozone to create wholesale digital euro to do settlements of financial market transactions.
Could you just maybe please go into detail what is wholesale? Because I think this is a term that which is not very current in normal speaking.
Yes. So, what is wholesale euro? So maybe also there I need to explain a little bit how the financial market settlement of transaction works. So what's the difference between commercial money and then central bank money? So the commercial banks, they have access to the central bank, so they have an account with the central bank. So as a retail client has an account with its bank. So a commercial bank has an account with the central bank. So if now there are several commercial banks who want to do transactions with each other, these transactions are settled in central bank money. So there's one account on the central bank is credited, the other one is debited. So now if you have financial market transactions, you buy bonds, you need to pay them, then you need to pay them in central bank money, because the bank is going to pay that. And there are a few projects, and these projects are on a DLT technology to settle these transactions. There are several central banks from the euro system who have a few solutions in place, or they work on solutions, especially there's the Banque de France, where the Bundesbank is involved. And very interesting, also the Luxembourg Central Bank, BCL, is on the list on the central banks that are involved. And we at the Spurcase currently, we work together with other partners, that's public information, on the first project to work with wholesale digital euro.
What we observe, indeed, it's kind of a striking rise of interest what concerns wholesale experimentation at the level of European Central Bank. At the moment, European Central Bank proceeds with the two phases of those kind of tests with all the participants which are interested to take part. And indeed, we appreciate that a highly, I would say, sufficient number of the financial institutions from Luxembourg also participate in those kind of two waves. The first wave started in May. And then the second wave started in the beginning of summer. And then all those two waves have to come up with a kind of final results in November this year. And then we also see a striking difference in terms of number of participants for those tests between the first wave and the second wave. So for the first wave, we counted a bit more than 10 different institutions, plus also indeed, as correctly as highlighted my colleague, Central Bank of Luxembourg. But for the second wave, we already counted more than 40 different institutions which participate. And plus also, we're also happy as a Luxembourg Banking Association see our members like Spurkes and then some other financial institutions which participate in those tests. And then the idea would be to make sure that those financial institutions would be able to say their feedback afterwards, to what extent those three solutions which have been developed by national banks like National Bank in Germany and France and also in Italy would satisfy the expectations in terms of settlement with the central bank money.
So when it comes now to benefits that you could have when moving over to the digital euro, what would be the main advantages for maybe start to we continue with the wholesale and then afterwards you could just state what are the main benefits of for the retail clients when they have the digital euro? So if someone wants to give some arguments.
In terms of, let's start with a kind of simple case, which is retail digital euro. Indeed, I totally agree with my colleagues at the moment. What we see is basically a decline of the usage of the cash. This is kind of obvious. So I have some figures for you to showcase, for instance, in terms of, let's say, the data which we have for the last 2 years. It was the year of 2022. 59% of all transactions have been using the payments in terms of cash. And then as compared to the 79 in 2016, it means that there is a kind of strong decline in terms of the usage of the cash. And then we see that in European Union, there are some kind of countries which are basically advancing their position in terms of usage of the digital payments, like, for instance, Finland, Netherlands, plus also Luxembourg, occupies the third, I would say, place. So indeed, the major rationale for the European Central Bank was to give a type of digital euro which would satisfy the needs and the current situation in terms of digitalization, where basically the behavior of the citizens basically change and then they start to use less and less cash and more digital payments. There should be a digital euro which would satisfy the new conditions and new level of the, I would say, innovative development. In this case, the digital euro would be a legal tender. So a legal tender by default is a situation where any kind of shop will have to accept a digital euro in this case and the same level as it is now for the banknotes and coins.
And something we may add is that for wholesale euro, we have to explain how the financial markets works when you buy a bond, for example. You have type of life cycle management, for example. So when you buy a bond, you expect a coupon. How is that coupon paid? Usually you have the bank where the bond is cleared, or the issuer has to pay the money to the bank, and then the bank distributes the coupon to the other banks where the customers have, or the investors have their bonds or their obligations, and that's something you can automatize or fully STP change in an STP process with the DLT technology. That's one example how it works. Or another example is the clearing of the transactions. So when you buy financial instruments, explicitly bonds, today that works with DVP, so delivery versus payment setup. So the buyer has to pay the money, and then the seller has to deliver the bonds, and then there's a central authority who checks if the payer has paid the money and if the seller has delivered the financial instrument, and afterwards the trade is settled. And that's typically something that you can automate. That's typically something where you can use DLTs to make the process smoother and more robust.
and also to speed up the settlement in terms of the cash. So it means that, for instance, the period of time between the trade as such and the finalization of the trade will become shorter when the basically the settlement of the cash part of the trade will be done almost instantly, because which is in most cases not the case nowadays, where we may count a few days after the deal when the final, I would say, settlement in terms of cash is finalized. And then the idea of this kind of wholesale is basically to make it as quick as possible, to make sure that basically the both counterparties of the deal will be satisfied and will be settled in terms of the financial obligations.
So we could be looking into 24/7 financial markets then. So on the weekends doing payments, they will arrive on a Saturday at 10 o'clock in the evening. You could do your transactions and they would arrive on the account immediately.
I would maybe, this kind of scheme, in my opinion, would be for sure applicable to the retail digital euro, where basically the idea of European Central Bank is to create a digital euro which would mimic 100% the cash. Because at the moment, for instance, once we pay with the banknotes and with the cash, we can pay it 24/7. I can give it to my friend, and then my friend will be satisfied with the payment which I would give to him while, let's say, sharing a pizza together. But in case of the wholesale digital euro situation is different, because basically there is kind of certain amount of time where the markets are open. And then at least I do not know how the basically ECB will create the infrastructure, but at least what we at the moment see, it's basically the way when the markets are open, all the transactions have to be settled and finalized. And in my opinion, for the wholesale digital euro, for sure, there will be no 24/7, but at least all the settlements will be conducted and finalized during those kind of period of time when the markets are open.
Yeah, maybe some experience I can share. So that in the United States, we shortened the life cycle of for the settlements of the trades from T+2 to T+1. So now it's one day earlier when these trades in the United States are settled. And that was a quite important topic in the financial markets, because it has an important impact on your IT systems, on your workflow, how you check your trades, you double check your trades. Before you had 2 days, now you have 1 day. And that's something that's very interesting when you come from the crypto world, where you are used that you can trade on 24/7, and then you discover the financial markets afterwards. That's something you can't understand why the financial markets still work like that. And then you fully understand why the crypto world puts some pressure on the classical world to adopt a shorter life cycle, that there's some needs for 24/7 payments in euro. You don't understand when you do a payment on Saturday why it will be settled on Monday.
I think on the other hand, there are also some question marks on how useful retail CBDC would be. So first of all, from the perspective of customers and end users, the additional value may not be completely obvious, because they are already today, they do have some access to real-time payments. So for instance, within Germany, I can usually pay instantly also during the weekend, at least between participating banks in the Giropay system. The European Payment Initiative also facilitates this for participating banks across Europe. And if I use a credit card, for instance, or PayPal, I'm also used to 24/7 transactions. So for me, it may not be immediately apparent what this changes, as I'm not familiar with how the monetary system works, which only a small fraction is. Then from the merchant's perspective, I think there is a quite strong motivation to do a retail CBDC, because they could save on transaction fees, which are quite high for credit card payments. Probably they would also be happy with systems like Giropay or European Payment Initiative, because also there the transaction fees are much lower. Because you take out basically the counterparty risk that the credit card provider needs to stand in for. Then on the side of banks, there might also be some reluctance to adopt a retail CBDC because they cannot earn interest on the holdings that users have in the CBDC. So in fact, the European Central Bank has already decided that there will be a quite strict limit on the CBDC holdings that individuals may have. So they won't be allowed to have more than 3,000 euros to make sure that they do not withdraw excessively from their commercial bank money accounts. And therefore, also for a user, you need to ask the question, okay, if they now need to open a second account to have access to money, but it's limited to 3,000 euros, is this really what is convenient? And wouldn't be the big tech payment providers or other solutions be more advanced in those few years in which we will be ready with the retail digital euro? So I think there are still a lot of open questions to be answered. And one motivation specifically for end users who need to adopt it to also unlock the other potential benefits could be enhanced privacy features, because this is something a lot of end users ask for and for which we don't have a solution as of today, neither provided by the prime payments sector nor by the central banks, except for cash. And since the use of cash is declining, users may seek for an alternative that promises them strong privacy guarantees, which are not met today by the digital payment systems they can use.
Yep. We already mentioned that what is the incentive for the banks to provide a solution for digital euros, and it also has some impact on money market policies, because it people have to understand that this kind of disintermediation of the banks. Today, how the banking system works, we collect money from our customers and then we provide loan to other customers. So therefore, we pay interest to our customers and ask interest from our customers on both sides of the balance sheet. And with the digital euros, it's the first time that the digital money from our customers is not within the bank, it's immediately next to the central bank. So these commercial banks can't work with that money anymore. So it's no benefit, there's no added value for the bank having that money because it's not in our account. And therefore, as my colleague mentioned, it's very important that that threshold is very low because it's bank's job to collect money, and if the money is immediately within the central bank, the banks can't do their job anymore. So that's some from money market policy. That's some interesting point to mention. And then the other point is, so the central bank will issue the money immediately to the end customer. They don't want to provide the technical solution. So what is know your customers, know your transactions, what with the digital tools so that the customer can intervene with the central bank. And that's something that the central bank wants to outsource to the commercial banks. So we don't have the money in our account as bank, but we have to provide a solution so that the customers can use this this new tool. So it's quite interesting how the market will evolve so that the banks have an incentive to provide that solution. But as of today, that's not the case.
Yeah, that's true. I totally agree with my colleagues. So at least a few elements to add what concerns the case of the intermediation of banks. Indeed, in the beginning when the discussion has been launched in terms of digital euro, we saw kind of the high level of concerns coming from the banks, what will be the role of the bank in that specific case. And then so far, what we observe is the following, that the ECB at the moment does not plan to hold accounts itself directly on its own platform. So it means that most likely, this kind of role of distribution of digital euro will be disseminated and will be given and delegated to commercial banks. And then the commercial banks most likely will be the distributors of those digital euro. And again, I totally agree with my colleagues that what will be indeed the compensation of this kind of work, which have to be done by the financial institutions, specifically what concerns AML and KYC, because by the end of the fact that the banks have to onboard their customers, and in case if, for instance, the customer wants to have a digital euro account, basically any kind of due diligence have to be conducted by financial institutions to make sure that those customers will be able to use digital euro. So this one point, what concerns indeed the role of commercial banks, and then, as I highlighted, that most likely they will be distributors of the digital euro. And then another point is about indeed holding limits. So specifically, indeed, the discussion was around about the 3,000 euros maximum limit, which would be allocated to, to clients. And then I just will give you a few kind of indications about the impact of that kind of threshold on banks. So it was a kind of study which was conducted by Copenhagen Economics, and then they try to simulate in case if the limit will be 3,000 euros per each customer to have a maximum amount of digital euro to be capped. So they calculated that the deposit outflow from the commercial banking money towards central bank digital euro money will be about 700 39 billion euro. So it's kind of enormous amount of money which basically will be somehow lost partially to the financial institutions, which would inevitably impact negatively the liquidity of financial institutions. And then if liquidity is also somehow negatively impacted, basically the amount of funds available for loans will also be limited. And in case if the amount of loans will be limited, basically the price of the loan can also be high. Of course, it's not in the interest of European Central Bank to have such kind of scenario. And then the idea is now indeed to see what should be the best limit, and then whether this limit should be set in order to make sure that there will be no any kind of negative consequences for the commercial banks with concerns availability or liquidity of those commercial bank money in those institutions.
Maybe a point that that we can add also for the money market policy is that it provides the European Central Bank with a new tool to execute money market policy. Maybe today that's not a topic anymore with the current interest rate environment, but it was a topic a few years ago when the interest rates were negative, because the European Central Bank already confirmed that there will be no interest rates on digital euro, so it will be zero. So it will not be negative. And one issue during the time where the interest rates were negative was that you can't put negative interest rates on retail customers, because they always have the possibility to put their commercial money out of the bank and change it into banknotes. So therefore, the central bank couldn't push even the interest rates even more into negative territory, because it would have an impact on retail world. By creating digital euros, where you know that the interest rates will always be zero, then you can put the interest rates. You are more flexible on the interest rates from the central bank, because it will only impact the world sales market, who can't change their money into cash. So I see it also as a new interesting tool to execute money market policy. And the other point that the central bank already made is that the digital euro will not be programmable money. So you can do with that money what you want. So it will not have a dedicated purpose. You could imagine, for example, in Luxembourg, we had the Luxembourg government issued vouchers that you had to use into hotels during the pandemic. So that's something the European Central Bank already excluded.
So no cash handouts directly to the consumer.
But that's something they could, but they can't do a cash out and say you have to buy a car with that. You can't. If they want to do so, kind of helicopter money, it creates a tool to do so, but they can't decide, or they promise not to have an impact what you're going to do with that money.
Which is an actual use case, I think, in some emerging countries where they are using digital currencies to get access to the whole population. So if maybe someone could explain. Because in developed countries as well, I think the inclusion is not as important, but in developing countries, digital currencies is quite important and revolutionary. So maybe someone would like to touch on that.
Indeed, what concerned, maybe we can touch it also later on, that yes, yeah, some countries indeed in developing world and specifically in Africa, so they have a high level of either underbank or unbank a population for which specifically such kind of central bank digital currencies could be a suitable solution. So in case if, for instance, there is no way that a person in those countries would be given a chance to have a banking account, so such kind of things which would basically replace a normal cash in those countries could be a suitable solution. And I totally agree with you that this model can be fully workable in case if, for instance, there are no any kind of local solution provider, either payment service provider or a fintech who already caters those needs. And for them, I mean, the sole, opportunity is to pay for their grocery in the kind of remote areas, is either basically to have cash or to have a kind of digital version of this cash. And then, as you know, at the moment, at the level of also European Central Bank, the discussion are going on in terms of how to basically execute payments in the case if there is no access to the internet. So those kind of transactions are going to be handled also in the context of offline payments, which means the way you can basically transfer a digital form of a digital euro from me to you in the case if there is no internet connection. And specifically, this is the case which is applicable to those developing countries where basically the level of the coverage in terms of the cellular network or in terms of the mobile network operators is not sufficiently enough. And there basically, there are two options. Either you pay in paper or in banknotes and cash, or you have to resort to a solution where basically you use your device, which is going to be either your iPhone or basically smartphone, which you can use in order to transfer money from a customer to a customer without basically accessing the network.
That's a very interesting point. I never thought about, let's imagine we have a blackout of a week or something. What happens then?
This is basically the idea to come up, at least what concerns European initiative, is to make sure that offline payments will be enabled. Like, for instance, I do not know, in case if you park your car downstairs in -4, there is no guarantee that there is a kind of internet connection over there. And basically, of course, it's kind of not a big likelihood that you will have to pay on the level -4 in the parking year, but maybe in the areas where there is no internet connection, such kind of payments have to be enabled and have a again, to mimic the normal cash, which we might have, like a banknotes and the coins. We can use this kind of, cash in any kind of moment, independent of whether there is a connection or no. It has to be the digital euro, which would have the similar kind of feature as a physical cash.
And this strategy is actually also outlined in the current draft for developing the strategy on how to implement the digital euro. So it will very likely facilitate offline payments based on the secure hardware we do find in modern mobile phones. Not all of the prerequisites are there yet, but there have been certain progresses in the last year, also with, for example, Apple opening access to their NFC chip and secure element, such that the EU could implement this. And also there have been provisions in other regulation, like the Digital Markets Act, that smartphone manufacturers must open access to such hardware components, having in mind that the digital euro might need them. On the other hand, there are also some challenges. So, for instance, if you use a device-to-device payment, you are indeed more resilient to both network and electricity outages. But we've also seen systematic failures of payment terminals in Europe in the last years. And if you're used to paying mobile phone to terminal at a merchant, and the terminal has an outage because of a lack of electricity or because some certificate was expired, which is also quite common, then the offline capability won't help you, unfortunately. Plus, there are also new risks in terms of money laundering and terrorist financing. So indeed, the offline payments are a great way also to improve privacy and to basically mimic the privacy guarantees of cash. However, there can also be abuse. So it's very likely that limits would need to be even lower than the limits that are being discussed for the digital euro per se. Plus, there would likely need to be, from time to time at least, a settlement on an online ledger that at least does some checks of the previous transactions, because if you don't have those at all, you're facing some risks. For instance, it's very difficult to prove proofs of proximity between devices. So if you read the proposal for the legislation on the digital euro, it claims that a device-to-device offline payment has the same risk profile as a cash transaction. So people need to be physically close to each other to do so. However, those proofs of proximity in the digital world are very difficult. So far, all of the proofs that have been devised, they're usually based on signal traveling times between the two devices, which by the theory of relativity and the limited speed of light and electromagnetic radiation can basically give you an upper bound on the distance. But unfortunately, the processing times are usually pretty large compared to the distance, the traveling times of the distance. And so people can indeed trick this and relay the electronic signal, and you could disguise online payment of between two partners that are several kilometers away from each other as a proximity payment. And if this becomes possible, then you are suddenly in another risk regime and you probably need other safeguards. And so I haven't seen a sophisticated discussion of those issues yet.
It's quite interesting, the whole development, because once again, also on a global scale, we have, please correct me, but we have three different approaches, I think. So the Chinese, they have embraced the digital currency, they have applied it already, we are looking for what we are doing, and the Americans, they reject it. So the Americans say, we will not make a competitor to cryptocurrencies because they are embracing cryptocurrencies. So is that enough for us as Europe, as a learning ground, to see what are the advantages of all the systems? And is that maybe a reason why we are moving on so slowly?
Well, I think one reason why we're moving on so slowly is that in Europe, we want to have our currency at least fully compliant with all European regulation.
And we have more of these.
And we have more of these, exactly. And unfortunately, some regulation makes sense. So privacy is a big issue. And Europe has one of the most important privacy regulation. So I prefer to have a digital euro than maybe a digital currency from another legislation where the privacy isn't so important as it is in Europe.
Because the privacy issues are, for example, in China, that if you are not in line with the political party, then afterwards you get taken out of the system.
For example, I think that's a valuable argument.
Yeah, so we will have to see how this evolves. At least, if I may say, you may be not aware of it, but we used to have something like a digital currency before here in Luxembourg, and this was called mini cash. I cannot stop thinking about mini cash. We had something which was a separate account, which was used to pay smaller amounts. I think it was 100 euros at the bakers or at the parking lots, which was a separate account, and you could top it up like you wanted. So this seems to me like a whole lot of work and regulations to go back into something which is mini cash. But as I said, you may not be aware of it, but it seems like it's still a long way to go.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, some of the issues we already discussed, that the reason why end users should adopt a digital euro are not particularly strong. There's also a communication problem, because if the banks don't have a strong incentive to convince their customers that they should now get a separate account to which they can then withdraw the bank money with which the bank would like to work, probably the bank won't say that this is the greatest of all ideas, then the central bank should probably also not say that commercial bank money is unsafe, because it's not. I mean, we have guarantees up to 100,000 euros that there is basically no counterparty risk. So why should people be afraid of having 3,000 euros in their commercial bank account? And so I have a bit the fear that the central bank also has maneuvered itself into a dead end a little bit, because now they are feeling pressure to come up with something. But if this something is not really adopted, then they have lost a lot of precious time to compete with big tech, crypto, and so on. And they also face the risk of reputational damage, which would also be a big risk. And so I'm a bit wondering why other alternatives, like, for example, looking into previous solutions like the one you mentioned, or also solutions that we have today based on Swift and like those kinds of API integrations of different banks, the target-based instant payment systems and so on, why this is not discussed more, because this would allow them to not build up a separate solution, which we are discussing now, but rather strengthen the connection between the European banks on the traditional rails that we already have, which could also be a cost issue. I mean, nobody is discussing the costs. And of course, the central bank says that the transactions will either be free or they will be capped at quite low transaction fees. But in the end, it will be the European taxpayers who pay for implementing the system. And the ECB has already disclosed that they are now calculating with more than 1 billion just for the exploration. And this does not cover operations in a continued fashion and so on. So I'm not really sure if the direction that's now being pursued is the most capital efficient one.
And then on my side, I would like also to add that we should also not overestimate the success of other jurisdictions what concerns introduction of CBDC. Like, for instance, yeah, we mentioned at some point digital yuan. So at the moment, indeed, I have making a few figures which would highlight that indeed the adoption of the digital yuan is growing. So at least the figures which we have in our possession during this kind of summertime in terms of transactions. So at the moment, allocated to digital yuan, it's about 231 billion euros at the moment, which is more than two times more as compared to the last year. But if we compare this amount, I would say, to the total cash in circulation, it's 0.16%. So you can, of course, imagine that it is from the absolute figures here, it looks brilliant. But of course, when we see the role of the digital yuan in the actual economy, is less than 1% in terms of the cash in circulation. So it means that indeed, still for those jurisdictions which have been a bit more advanced as compared to European Union, they face the issue of the adoption of this new technology. And then it's not only indeed, which is totally important, the whole ecosystem which would incentivize all the market actors to participate in the distribution of digital euro, like commercial banks, plus also payment institutions, but also an incentive for end customers to use this either digital yuan or digital euro afterwards. So this is a lot of work to be done. And then, yeah, of course, we understand that, for instance, in case of China, it's kind of population which is very tech savvy population, and they, of course, they use different kind of platforms, and then for them still the usage of the platforms which they used to use, like WeChat or Alipay, so they still continue using. And then at that moment it's still a lot to do for digital yuan to bridge the gap between the adoption of those kind of platform like solutions as compared to the digital yuan. So and then this kind of incentivation is important, and then also education of citizens, education of all the market actors. What does it mean, digital euro, and then what it will bring, what are the benefits? Those are the things which for sure European central banks will do, and then it should precede the deployment of the solution to make sure that the final, the network effect would be beneficial for the adoption of digital euro in European Union.
Yeah, I think in China you have big competitors, which is the private sector. As you mentioned, WeChat and Alipay. Well, WeChat, for example, is a WhatsApp on steroids. So they are booking their taxis, their restaurants, and they're making instant payments via these platforms, which could be a break for adoption of the centralized currency indeed.
That's true.
Thank you very much for your input. Yeah, it was a real pleasure.
Evergreens by Spurkis. Subscribe to the podcast now and never miss an episode again.